Before Dad could answer, there was a commotion across the room. Roddy Marquez was choking. In his attempt to devour his burger as quickly as possible, he had apparently forgotten to chew. Now he was red-faced and wheezing, desperately signaling that something was jammed in his gullet.
"Ooh," Violet cried happily, "charades!"
"He's choking," Mom corrected, and then she and Dad rushed to Roddy's aid. Half the room was doing the same thing. Every single person at MBA had to take courses in basic first aid, even Violet, though she mostly just played house with the CPR dummy. There's probably no better place to nearly choke to death. Chang got there first. He snaked his tattooed arms around Roddy's waist from behind and gave him a quick, sharp jab in the solar plexus. A hunk of meat the size of an egg rocketed out of Roddy's mouth, sailed halfway across the room, and nailed Lars Sjoberg in the face. Lars had been too busy gobbling his own meal to pay attention to anything else, even the near death of another person, so he didn't even see the partly chewed burger coming until it hit his forehead with a wet splat. Startled, Lars shrieked and toppled backward off his inflatable chair, upending the dinner table en route. All the Sjoberg family's food, including the entire tub of coleslaw Patton had demanded, pitched into the air and then landed on Lars. If this had happened to anyone else at MBA, the rest of us might have reacted with concern. But since Lars Sjoberg had spent the last few weeks coming up with new ways to prove he was the biggest jerk in the universe, we all burst into laughter instead. Even Nina, who I'd never seen laugh before. Lars scrambled to his feet, flushed in embarrassment, coated in coleslaw, Roddy's hacked-up hamburger still clinging to his face like a meat barnacle. "This is not funny!" he screamed at us, which just made the whole thing even funnier. Everyone laughed harder, and Lars seethed so angrily I thought the meat on his head might start frying. "That does it!" he roared, then wheeled on Nina. "I've had it with this horrible place! I want my money back!" Nina stifled her laughter in surprise.
"I have no authorization to do that. As far as I'm aware, Mr. Sjoberg, your contract said there would be no refunds."
"The contract also said this would be the adventure of a lifetime."
Lars pried the hunk of masticated meat off his head and threw it against the wall, where it stuck fast.
"Instead, it's been torture. Our accommodations are hideous, the food is repulsive, and you have all been terrible hosts. I've had enough. When the rocket returns to Earth in 2 days, I demand that my family and I be on it."
Back at the Marquez table, Roddy had quickly recovered from his near-death experience and was currently throwing a fit as he'd hocked up a good portion of his hamburger and now wanted a new one. His mother was trying to calm him.
"There's only one hamburger per person," she told him.
"That's not fair," Roddy wailed. "I only got to eat half of mine."
"Next time, try chewing your food," Cesar told him. "Like this."
He took a bite of his own hamburger and made a show of enjoying it to his brother. Roddy screamed with frustration and dove across the table, grabbing for Cesar's burger. Cesar casually slammed Roddy's face into the table and pinned him there, then continued to eat while his brother squirmed helplessly.
"Lots of entertainment here tonight," Dad said to us.
Across the room, Nina was facing down Lars Sjoberg.
"You know I can't send you back," she said. "All available seats on that rocket are filled. You're not scheduled to leave for another 3 months."
"Then bump some people," Lars demanded.
"Yes, Nina," Chang cried. "Please bump someone. The sooner we get rid of the Sjobergs, the better."
Everyone in the room chimed agreement, except for the temp scheduled to go back on the rocket, who looked horrified by the idea that they might end up stuck at the station for another 3 months. This embarrassed and enraged Lars Sjoberg even more.
"You can't keep me here against my will," he told Nina. "I am one of the most influential men on Earth."
"I hate to break it to you," Chang taunted, "but you're not on Earth anymore."
At the Marquez table, Roddy squirmed loose from Cesar's grasp, and aware he wasn't going to get any of his brother's burger, ran for his pre-chewed chunk of meat, which was still stuck to the wall.
"Roddy, no!" his mother cried, grabbing him by the collar. "Don't you dare eat that!"
Meanwhile, Lars was staring Nina down.
"I want to be on the next rocket home," he told her. "Make it happen, or I can make your life very, very difficult from now on. Not just here, but back on Earth as well. I have many friends in high places."
With that, he spun on his heel and stormed out of the mess, his family right behind him. There was a moment of stunned silence, and then everyone who didn't have a hamburger yet began clamoring for one. Maybe they all felt that Lars's threat had been an empty one, or maybe their desire for fresh meat trumped any concerns about Nina. But with the Sjobergs gone, the atmosphere in the mess became even more festive than before. Only Nina seemed concerned. And me. I was concerned, too. If Lars Sjoberg had murdered Dr. Holtz, he'd just found an excuse to get himself off the moon quickly. Or at least he was trying. I could understand why. If Lars Sjoberg was guilty, as long as he stayed on the moon, he was trapped. But if he could get back to Earth, he was so rich and powerful that his lawyers could probably fight off any attempt to bring him to justice. Across the room, Roddy wriggled free from his mother's grasp and snatched the chewed burger off the wall. He was about to cram it into his mouth again when his mother tackled him. The two of them rolled around on the floor, grappling for the ball of half-eaten meat.
"For goodness sake, Rodrigo, have some dignity!" Dr. Brahmaputra Marquez yelled. "No," Roddy cried, "I'm too hungry!"
My smartwatch vibrated. I was so on edge that I jumped, startled by the sensation. I checked it and found a text from Kira.
"Found what you were looking for. Come see. My room. Now."
Excerpt from the Official Residence Guide to Moonbase Alpha. Copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Airlocks. There are two exit points at MBA, the main airlock and the emergency backup airlock. The main airlock is the primary access to and from the lunar surface, whereas the emergency backup airlock should never, ever be used unless 1. Immediate evacuation from MBA is necessary, and 2. The main airlock is blocked and or non-functional. Use of the main airlock is limited to those lunar nauts with official, sanctioned duties upon the lunar surface, i.e., maintenance, research, or transit to and from the launch pad. If you do not have sanctioned duties on the lunar surface, please stay away from the main airlock. The main airlock is not a toy. Tampering with it could jeopardize your life, as well as the lives of your family and friends at MBA. Rest assured, however, that such an occurrence is extremely unlikely. The Hamilton XP-50 airlock at MBA has been subjected to years of stress testing at NASA, and during that time we had a 99.9995% success rate. Chapter 10. Last Words. Lunar Day 188. After Dinner. Kira opened the door to her residence the moment after I knocked on it, then yanked me inside and locked it behind us.
"What took you so long?" she asked suspiciously.
"I came as soon as I got your message," I said.
"I texted you 5 minutes ago.
I had to excuse myself from dinner, and there was pie." Kira arched an eyebrow.
"Pie? I haven't had pie in months," I told her. "And this was apple, my favorite."
I produced a plate with a slice from behind my back. "I brought you some as well. I figured you'd be hungry, seeing as you skipped dinner."
"I was working on our project."
Kira accepted the pie from me and eagerly took a bite. Then she made a face.
"What's wrong?" I asked. "This pie isn't very good," she said.
"It's not?" I was genuinely surprised. To me, the pie had tasted incredible.
"Wow, my taste buds must have really deteriorated up here. If you don't want the pie, I'll eat it."
"No," Kira said quickly. "You were right. I'm starving. I got all wrapped up in this and totally lost track of time." She pointed toward her slim screen table with her fork. I quickly sat down there.
"So you found the footage of Dr. Holtz?"
"I did." Kira pulled up an inflatacube beside me, her eyes wide with excitement.
"That's amazing. You must be some kind of computer genius."
"Not exactly. I kind of cheated."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, you told me Roddy had already figured out how to hack the system, so I tracked him down this afternoon and asked him how to do it."
"And he told you? You just met him."
"I just met you," Kira countered, "and you trusted me to do this investigation with you."
"That's different," I said defensively, knowing it really wasn't.
"You overheard me talking about this. I had no choice but to let you help."
"Whatever," Kira shrugged. "Point is, Roddy told me how to do it. I didn't tell him the real reason why I wanted to, of course. I just said I didn't like NASA having control of everything I did online here."
"And he bought that?"
"Yeah. Although, to be honest, I think he might have a bit of a crush on me. He was a little too excited to help me hack the system. And then he kept asking if I wanted to eat dinner with him and his family tonight, or to see his room."
I considered things from Roddy's point of view. There he was on the moon, cut off from any girls his age for months, and the first one who showed up was cute and seemed to like computers as much as he did. "He's got a crush on you, all right."
"Ick. So now, by helping you with this, I could end up in trouble with Nina, and I've got the virtual reality fiend crushing on me." Hey, you asked to help me. And besides, you said you'd done plenty of worse things.
Kira cast a wary glance at me.
Yeah, I have.
I really wanted to see what Kira had found on the computer, but I couldn't help asking.
Like what?
Kira sized me up for a moment, then said,
I like going places I'm not supposed to go.
You mean like trespassing?
Yeah, but not like in a bad way, really.
Kira now looked embarrassed that I brought this up.
It's just that a lot of the time there are rules telling you you can't go someplace for no good reason, and so I just kind of ignore them.
So where have you gone?
All sorts of cool places.
The storage area where they keep all the paintings at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. The places where they keep the animals at the zoo. The tunnels underneath the Eagles football stadium.
Really? I asked. How'd you get in there?
I just walk in.
And your dad doesn't freak out?
Have you met my dad? He's usually not paying much attention to me. I've wandered off for an hour without him noticing.
So he's never realized?
No, he has. And he wasn't happy, of course. But I'm not a criminal. I don't steal anything or vandalize stuff. I'm just curious. Especially about places that people think should be off-limits. Which might be why I was so interested to come up here. How much more off-limits can you get than the moon, right?
Did you ever get caught?
Not really. Most people didn't even seem to notice me. But if security did come, I'd just pretend to be a lost little kid and cry a bit, and they'd take pity on me. Half the time, they'd even give me candy.
Dad told me to knock it off when NASA started vetting us, though. He didn't want them to ding us because I was a troublemaker.
I started to ask something else, but before I could, Kira said,
Do you want to see what I found about Dr. Holtz or not?
Of course I do.
Okay, then. Computer, bring up the footage.
Yes, ma'am.
The computer spoke in the standard factory-setting female voice. Kira and her father obviously hadn't bothered to customize it yet. A frozen image of security footage appeared on the slim screen. It was the staging area for the main airlock, viewed from a high angle. Kira explained,
Even though getting into the system was easy after Roddy told me how, it still took a while to track all this down. And then, after I figured out how to access the camera feeds, I still had to figure out which ones to look at. Do you have any idea how many cameras there are at this place?
A few hundred, I ventured.
2,026, Kira corrected.
I sat back in surprise.
Really? Kira nodded. They're everywhere. There are at least a dozen in every room, except for our residences. Even the exterior is covered with them. They're on the roof, in the walls, out by the solar arrays.
They're supposed to be for safety, I said, in case a meteor takes out a solar panel or something. We can see what happened without having to go outside.
I get that, Kira told me. But how do you explain having 16 cameras in the bathrooms? Does NASA think there are going to be a lot of meteor strikes in there?
I know, I said. It's creepy.
Anyway, Kira went on, there were a ton of camera feeds to sort through, and each one of them has months of footage logged, but I finally tracked down what you need.
She pointed at the frozen frame on the slim screen.
This is the widest angle I could find at the staging area, so if Dr. Holtz was with anyone, you ought to be able to see them, right?
Right, I agreed. Indeed, this particular footage had been shot with a wide-angle fisheye lens so that the frame showed not just the staging area and the main airlock, but significant portions of the hallways on either side.
Okay, then, Kira said. Watch what happens. Computer, run it.
Yes, ma'am.
The camera feed began running. There was a timestamp at the bottom indicating it was 5:23 in the morning. After a few seconds, Dr. Holtz entered the staging area, coming from the direction of the mess and the science pod. He plodded along slowly, his face drawn and sad.
Whoa,
I said.
What?
Kira asked. That hardly seems like Dr. Holtz, I told her. Usually he was incredibly happy. He loved being here. You could even see it in how he walked. He always had this kind of bounce to his step. But look at him here, I pointed to the screen.
He looks miserable, Kira said. Like he knows he's about to die.
Yes, I agreed. Struck by the thought. But when I overheard him in the bathroom 3 hours before this, he was even happier than usual. Delirious, really.
Wait, Kira paused the footage. What's this about the bathroom?
I recounted what I'd overheard as quickly as I could, desperately wanting to see the rest of the security footage, but aware that Kira ought to be up to speed on everything I knew. When I got to the part about Dr. Holtz's discovery, her jaw dropped.
Whoa, she said.
Do you have any idea what he'd found?
No, I told her. But that's what's so strange. How do you go from being on top of the world like he was at 2:30 in the morning, so excited to share his discovery with everyone, to looking as miserable as he does at 5:30?
I don't know, Kira admitted. Computer, let it run.
The tape started up again. Dr. Holtz opened the locker where the spacesuits were stored, removed his suit, and slowly pulled it on. Kira's words about him knowing he was going to die echoed in my ears.
Now Dr. Holtz looked like a man dressing for his own funeral. There's something I don't get, Kira said. If he knew he was going to die, why bother suiting up at all? Why not just walk outside in his regular clothes?
I guess whoever was behind this wanted it to look like an accident, I suggested.
Well, that brings us to another problem. Kira turned to me. If there was someone else behind this, where were they when it was happening?
I don't know, I conceded. That had been nagging at me, too. In the entire wide sweep shown by the camera angle, not a single other person was visible. Dr. Holtz was entirely on his own. In the footage, he was making a good show of taking the proper precautions for going outside. He sealed his suit, he locked the helmet on, he checked the various gauges and readouts. As far as I could tell, his suit looked like it was on correctly. Then Dr. Holtz started toward the airlock. I sighed.
What's wrong? Kira asked.
I thought this was going to be easier, I said, that there'd be a bad guy forcing him out the airlock with a gun or something. But there's not. This looks exactly like what Nina says it is, an accident, not a murder.
But what about Dr. Holtz's behavior? You said that was strange.
I shrugged. That's still not proof anyone forced him to do this. If anything, it might look like more evidence that this was an accident. Like maybe he was distracted and not thinking clearly. Or like he was depressed and this was a suicide.
You're right, Kira agreed. But there's one more thing you need to see.
What? I asked.
Watch Dr. Holtz closely once he gets into the airlock. I returned my full attention to the screen. Dr. Holtz was at the airlock now. He typed the access code on a keypad and the inner door slid open. Dr. Holtz stepped into the pressurization chamber and the door slid back, locking him in. Dr. Holtz then slid his right hand beneath the open palm of his left hand. There, Kira cried, stopping the footage.
What?
I asked. All he's doing is moving his hands around. Yeah, but why? That's a weird gesture to make, isn't it? Especially if you only have a few seconds left to live. I thought about it. At first glance, the gesture was so small it hadn't even seemed deliberate. But now that Kira mentioned it, it does seem a little strange. Yeah, Kira said. If I only had a few seconds left to live, I'd be trying to say something, especially if I knew there were cameras all around.
Is there a better angle of what he's doing? I asked.
Of course. There are four cameras in the airlock alone. I just started with this angle so you could see there wasn't anyone around. Computer, bring up angle 2 and run it.
Yes, ma'am.
A new piece of security footage popped up. This one was taken from inside the airlock.
Okay, Kira said. We're starting this from right after he enters the airlock, before he moves his hands.
The camera was much closer to Dr. Holtz, set in the wall between the airlock doors. As Dr. Holtz stepped into the airlock, he took up the entire frame. Unfortunately, we couldn't see his face. The moon's atmosphere isn't strong enough to reflect the sun's radiation, so all space helmets have protective shielding built in, which turns them all into big mirrors. Check out any photos of astronauts on the moon if you want to see what I mean. Instead of Dr. Holtz, we saw the reflection of the interior of the airlock. The inner airlock door slid shut behind Dr. Holtz. Then, for only a fraction of a second, he turned toward the camera.
There, Kira said. Did you see that? He knows the camera's there, but he's trying not to look at it.
Why not? I asked.
Maybe because he knew someone was watching him on it, Kira suggested. Check out his hands.
Once again, I watched Dr. Holtz move his hands. This time from the much closer camera inside the airlock. He'd returned his gaze to the lunar surface as though he wasn't even aware of what his own hands were doing. In fact, the hand gestures he was making were so subtle, I might not have even noticed he was making them had Kira not pointed it out. From this angle, we could see that he was pointing with his right hand as he slid it under the open palm of his left. Then he balled his right fist and raised it to his chest. Kira paused the footage again.
What is that? It's not just fidgeting, right? His movements are too deliberate.
Yeah, they are.
I shut my eyes, trying to think.
There was something about Dr. Holtz's motions that was familiar to me, only I couldn't recall why. An idea was nagging at me, though, like I'd seen them before, but a long time ago. At first I thought they might be some hand exercises, Kira said. You know, to get his space gloves all flexed out for the moonwalk. But then I thought, if he knows he's going to die, what's the point of flexing his gloves? Hold on, I told her. I need a minute to figure this out. You know what he's doing? Kira asked excitedly. Maybe. I kept my eyes closed, digging through the recesses of my mind. I knew Kira had a point about the gloves. They were important somehow. Space gloves had always been trouble for astronauts. The issue was, spacesuits had to be inflated to the right atmospheric pressure or you'd die. But when you inflated them, the gloves filled up with air as well and got stiff, which made them hard to use. It was like having your hands inside balloons. In the early days of moonwalks, even something as simple as making a fist had been incredibly difficult. Over the years, NASA had spent billions to improve the gloves, as well as the rest of the suits. Through a combination of space-age fabrics, new pressure systems, and robotics embedded in their exterior, the gloves became far easier to use. But they still aren't perfect. Making any motion with your fingers is work, which meant that, no matter how casual Dr. Holtz was trying to appear, the signs he was making with his hands weren't random. Signs. A sudden memory came to me. I was 6 years old visiting my great-grandfather in Palm Springs, California. I didn't know it at the time, but it was the last time I was going to see him. My parents knew he was sick, though, and so did he. Mom and Dad had brought me there to say goodbye to him. I remembered being upset that great-granddad couldn't play with me the way he normally did when I came to visit. Instead, he was staying inside on the couch while I swam in the pool with my father. Dad had been teaching me to do a cannonball, and I wanted great-granddad to see, so I looked through the glass doors into the house. My mother was talking to great-granddad, her back to me so that he could watch me through the windows. Only she wasn't talking at all. She was making gestures with her hands, and great-granddad was responding in kind. My eyes snapped open. "It's sign language," I exclaimed. My sudden outburst caught Kira by surprise so badly she tumbled off her inflatacube, but she sprang right back to her feet. "What's sign language?" "You know how people are sometimes born without the ability to hear?" I asked. "Sure, deafness. My cousin had that, but they gave her a cochlear implant and she could hear right away. It's no big deal." "Right, but it wasn't always like that. Not so long ago, you couldn't just give an operation to a deaf person or a blind person or someone who was paralyzed and make them like everyone else. Instead, if you were born deaf or blind or paraplegic, you stayed that way." "I know," Kira said, a little indignantly. "I read history." "Well, how do you think deaf people communicated back then?" Kira looked at me blankly. It was probably the same look I'd given my parents when they'd asked me to guess how people had ever taken photographs before there were digital cameras. And then I saw the wheels start to turn in her mind.
"They used their hands?"
"Exactly," I said. "It was called sign language. Almost no one uses it anymore, because pretty much everyone who's born deaf gets the cochlear operation right away. But Mom once told me that sign language used to be one of the most common languages in the world."
"So Dr. Holtz might have learned it when he was a kid," Kira suggested.
"Right. Maybe he had a relative who was born deaf or who lost their hearing. That's what happened with my great-granddad. His ears went at the end and he was too sick to operate on to fix it, so he and my mom had to learn signs to communicate." Kira whooped happily.
"You're a genius, Dash. I never would have thought of that in a million years."
"I'm sure you would have soon enough."
"No, I've never even heard of sign language before. So what's Dr. Holtz saying?"
"I don't know," I admitted. "I never learned it myself, but the base computer is programmed to understand thousands of languages. Maybe this is one of them."
"Of course," Kira exclaimed. "Computer, can you translate sign language?"
"Which Mayan language?" the computer replied. "I am programmed for Cholan, Tseltalan, and Kanjobalan."
"Not Mayan language," I snapped. "Sign language. Can you translate sign language?"
"American Sign Language?" the computer asked.
I guess. I hadn't known there were other kinds.
"Yes," the computer told me. "I have that capability."
"Great," Kira said. "I'm going to play a piece of video. Please analyze it and tell us what Dr. Holtz is saying."
"I will do my best," the computer replied.
Kira rewound the footage to the moment of Dr. Holtz stepping into the airlock, then played it. We watched as he made his hand signals again and let it continue beyond the point where we'd paused the footage before. As Dr. Holt signed, I felt a terrible sense of fear begin to overwhelm me, because every moment took us closer to the end of Dr. Holtz's life. I didn't want to watch it, and yet I had to, for Dr. Holtz's sake. Obviously, he'd hoped that someone would watch the footage. That was the whole point of signing, to get a final message across. And yet, at the same time, he was hoping that whoever had forced him out onto the lunar surface wouldn't notice what he was doing. Save for the one quick glance at the camera, he faced out the window toward the moon. His hand seemed to move completely independently from the rest of him. On occasion, he moved his arms, lifting his hands close to his helmet, though he did it with a subtlety that made it look more like stretching than signing. After about 20 seconds, the outer airlock door slid open. Although it wasn't visible, all the precious oxygen in the airlock would have dissipated instantly. Dr. Holtz didn't cower from his fate. Instead, he met it boldly. He stepped out the door onto the dusty surface of the moon. He had stopped signing by now. His message was finished. If anything, Dr. Holt seemed to be relishing his final moments of life. After all, he was spending them on the moon. He bounded twice on the surface, then turned back toward the moon base, tilting his head back as far as he could.
"What do you think he's looking at?" Kira asked.
"Let's find out. Computer, zoom in on Dr. Holtz."
"Yes, sir."
The image of Dr. Holtz enlarged, got grainier, and then resolved. In the visor of Dr. Holtz's space helmet, we could see the reflection of a blue-green ball above him.
"It's Earth," Kira said. "What do you think he's looking there for?"
I shrugged. Maybe he wanted to be looking at something beautiful when he died instead of this ugly moon base. Kira nodded, accepting that.
"It happens in only a few more seconds," she told me. "Do you want to see it?"
"No," I said honestly. "I don't." I liked the idea of my last image of Dr. Holtz being one in which he was still upright, staring at Earth from the surface of the moon. "Computer, can you translate the signs he made?"
"Yes. Here is what Dr. Holtz signed. I am being murdered."
"Really?" I looked to Kira, my heart thumping. I was at once thrilled and horrified to have been right. Kira seemed to be struck the same way.
"You're sure? He says he was being murdered?"
The computer explained.
"Well, in actuality, he was simply making the hand signal for murder. In American Sign Language, the verb forms of to be are not signed, but are instead extrapolated from the context. One could also argue that he was saying, 'This is a murder,' but 'I am being murdered' seems more appropriate." Even though I'd suspected there had been foul play, it was stunning to hear it confirmed. Somehow the computer's voice made it worse. The computer, being a computer, was completely emotionless. Even when discussing such an awful event, it seemed horribly wrong to me.
"What else does he say?" I asked. The computer replied,
"The full transcript of his statement is, 'I am being murdered. Earth killed me. Find my phone. Tell my family I love them.'"
Kira and I kept our eyes locked on each other, trying to make sense of all that. She was the first to speak.
"Earth killed me?"
"That's correct," the computer replied.
"How could the Earth kill someone?" Kira asked, this time to me.
I could only shake my head in response. "I have no idea. Maybe that's why he wants us to find his phone."
"You mean that ancient cell phone he had back on Earth? He was still using that thing?"
"Yes, he said the smartwatch screens were too small."
"That must have been 30 years old." Kira shook her head. "Boy, what a caveman."
"Dr. Holtz wasn't anti-tech," I said defensively. "He lived on the moon, for Pete's sake. He just liked using his old phone."
"So what are you thinking? That he left some evidence on it somehow?"
"Yes. Or maybe a longer explanation for why he did this."
"Where do you think it is? His residence?"
"I doubt it. If he was trying to hide his phone, that's the first place anyone would look."
"What makes you think he hid it?" Kira asked.
"If you had evidence proving someone killed you, would you leave it out where anyone could find it?"
"Good point."
"Still, it's probably worth checking his room anyhow," I admitted, "just in case." Kira jumped to her feet.
"Let's do it now, while everyone else is still at dinner."
"Wait," I said. "I need a copy of those recordings."
"Sure," Kira agreed. "We need to show them to someone, right? I mean, we've got Dr. Holt stating he's being murdered here."
"By planet Earth," I said with a sigh, "whatever that means."
Kira said, "It's still evidence, though. Who should we give it to?
Nina? She won't be able to ignore this.
She might try, I countered. This is probably the last thing Nina wants to see.
So? This is a murder. Someone has to investigate it.
Don't worry. Someone will.
I touched my watch to the slim screen. The computer immediately downloaded the recordings of Dr. Holtz to it. I know who to show these to.
Who?
Kira asked. I can't tell you right now. I hurried out the door. Kira did her best to follow me, though she was still having trouble walking in low gravity.
Oh, come on! I got them for you!
And I owe you big for this. I led the way down the catwalk. Dr. Holtz also lived on the upper residence level, at the opposite end from Nina. We had to pass the Sjoberg suite on the way. I could hear Lars raging inside. It sounded like he was on the phone, shouting at someone on Earth.
I don't care what it takes. Just get me off this godforsaken rock.
As we reached Dr. Holtz's residence, my smartwatch pinged, delivering a text. To my surprise, the text said it was from Kira, which wasn't possible, as she was standing right in front of me, jostling the knob of Dr. Holtz's door. Even more unsettling was the text itself. Dash, be careful, or you'll end up like Dr. Holtz. Kira turned back to me, frustrated.
The room's locked. Any idea how to get in?
No. My mind was racing after the threatening text. Whoever had sent it must have hacked Kira's account to hide their identity. But the message was still clear. They knew I was investigating and wanted me to stop. But was it from the killer themselves, or someone who didn't want me snooping? And if it was from the killer, was this just a scare tactic, or would they really come for me, too?
Dash, Kira asked, what's wrong?
I met her gaze and saw the concern in her eyes. I wondered if I looked as scared as I felt. My heart was pounding, and I could feel sweat blossoming on my brow. And now, here I was, with Kira, poking around Dr. Holtz's door right out in the open, meaning whoever had sent the text would know she was helping me out.
Nothing, I said. Oh, please, Kira sighed. You look like you just got punched in the stomach. What's going on?
I couldn't bring myself to tell her the truth. Not right then. I didn't want to frighten her. You ought to get back to your room, I told her. I have to go find someone.
Who?
Someone who can help us, I said, and then ran off in search of Zan Perfonic.
Excerpt from the Official Residence Guide to Moonbase Alpha, copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Robotics. As robots are an increasingly important part of life on Earth, it should come as no surprise that they are integral to life at MBA as well. Since the lunar surface is so inhospitable to humans, robots will be used to handle as many tasks outside the base as possible, including maintenance, repairs, and research. If a robot can handle the job, please do not send a human outside to do it. Use of all robotics must be coordinated via the base roboticist. Please do not attempt to work the robots without permission. Even though they are designed to be indestructible, they can still break. Should this happen, they are extremely expensive and very difficult to replace. However, when used properly, with supervision, the robots can make your life at MBA safer, easier, and much more enjoyable.
Chapter 11. Space Madness. Lunar Day 188. Bedtime. Unfortunately, Zan was nowhere to be found. I circled the entire base 3 times, but she wasn't in any of the common areas. Lots of people remained in the mess, still savoring their last morsels of fresh pie. A few were even licking their plates clean, although a lot of the temps had retired to their quarters. Arrival day can be exhausting. My parents and Violet had left as well. There were a few folks in the gym, and Roddy had taken his usual place in the rec room, jacked into the comlink. He's there so often he might as well be a piece of furniture. The science pod was empty, as were the control rooms, save for Daphne, who was overseeing the robot arm. The Raptor rocket had brought plenty of heavy cargo that humans couldn't carry. New solar arrays, a lunar rover, and construction materials for Moonbase Beta. All of that had to be moved with the arm, which is half robot, half crane. It's enormous, with a span of 100 feet, and it looks surprisingly like a real human arm and hand, minus the flesh and with steel instead of bone. There are only 2 differences. The hand has 2 thumbs in addition to its 4 fingers, which gives it better grip, while the arm has 3 joints, which gives it greater flexibility. The arm is anchored next to the rover garage outside,
where it can reach from MBA to the launch pad and solar array too. Like most robots, the arm can do its job well without much human input. All it needs is the occasional order from Daphne about what to do next. Therefore, Daphne wasn't working that hard. She was reading an e-book, only glancing at the camera monitors every now and then to make sure everything was going well. However, when I looped past her on my third sweep of the base, she had stopped reading. Instead, she was furiously typing at one of the computers. Lines of code filled the screen. I edged forward, wondering what she was doing. Daphne suddenly seemed to sense I was there. She spun around quickly, covering the computer screen with her body. "Hey, Dash," she called, trying to sound casual, although her voice sounded higher than usual. "Are you doing laps or looking for someone?" I almost asked if she'd seen Zan, but then caught myself, remembering that Zan had warned me not to let anyone know we were working together. Daphne was the least threatening adult at the station. I couldn't imagine her squashing a bug, let alone bumping off Dr. Holtz. But Zan still wouldn't want me tipping her off about us. "I'm looking for my folks," I lied. "I think they took your sister back to your room," Daphne laughed. "That Violet's such a pistol. I love her. She conned 3 people into giving her an extra slice of pie, then got hopped up on sugar and ran around like a hurricane until she collapsed from exhaustion." "Sounds like Violet, all right." I gave Daphne a wave of thanks and headed home. I figured Zan must have turned in for the night herself, and all the temps shared sleeping quarters. Despite how anxious I was to talk to her, it looked like I'd have to wait for her to come find me. Daphne didn't resume typing on the computer, at least not while I was in range. Instead, she made a show of monitoring the robot arm as I walked away. Sure enough, my family was back in our room. Violet was almost comatose after her sugar rush, murmuring nonsense while Dad tried to pour her into her Hello Kitty pajamas. Mom was seated at the table, typing on the slim screen. "Hey," Mom said, nice and chipper. "Did you find Kira?" "Yes." Violet sighed sleepily. "I love pie." "What was the big emergency?" Dad asked me. "She was just trying to get everything set up in her room and couldn't figure out the computer." I didn't like lying to my parents, but I knew they wouldn't be pleased with the truth. "That couldn't have waited until the end of dinner?" Mom inquired. "What are you writing?" I asked, trying to change the subject. It worked. "A eulogy for Dr. Holtz," Mom said. "Nina wants to have a ceremony for him tomorrow, and she asked me to speak." "Only you?" I wanted to know. "No," Mom said. "A few others will talk too. Nina, Dr. Jenke, maybe Kira's father." "I want a pony," Violet said dreamily. Dad slid her into her sleep pod and gave her a kiss on the forehead. A second later, she was snoring. "What's happening to Dr. Holtz's body?" I asked. "NASA gave permission to bury it on the moon," Mom said, "and so did Dr. Holtz's daughter. She said it would be the perfect place for her father to end up. Plus, Katya and the others didn't like the idea of bringing a corpse back with them on the rocket." "Who's digging the grave?" I asked. "No one," Mom explained. "Daphne's sending some robots out to do it tomorrow. It's too dangerous to use humans for this. The crust is so thick they'll have to blast through it." I sat next to my mother at the table. "Will the body decay here?" "Ew," Mom said. "What kind of question is that?" "A legitimate one," Dad told her. "No, the body won't really decay, without an atmosphere or any life forms to break it down. Instead, it'll sort of mummify." I nodded, then turned back to my mother. "What are you going to say?" "The usual, I guess. What a great person Dr. Holtz was, how he was so committed to human spaceflight, how this place was the realization of his life's work, blah, blah, blah." Mom frowned and put her face in her hands. "It's so darn difficult, summing up a man's entire life in one speech." Dad said, "If anyone can do it, it's you." He came behind Mom and kneaded her shoulders. Mom sighed with relief and closed her eyes. "Mom," I said, "you were going to tell me something about Dr. Holtz at breakfast, but you never got to because Dr. Marquez interrupted us. Something important I should know about Dr. Holtz." Mom reluctantly opened her eyes. She looked a little confused, like she was trying to remember the conversation. I tried to jolt her memory. "I was saying this hadn't been an accident, and you said there was something else I ought to know?" "Oh, right." Mom leaned in close to me. "This is not to be repeated, though. I don't want it leaving this room." "Sure. What is it?" Mom said, "I think Dr. Holtz's mind might have been slipping."
I glanced at Dad. He didn't seem surprised by this, so I guess he and Mom had discussed it before.
How so?
Well, he didn't seem as sharp as usual over the last few weeks, Mom told me. He was distracted a lot, kind of spaced out, and then he'd be manic, incredibly happy, unnaturally so. I thought back to Dr. Holtz in the bathroom the night before he died. Maybe he was just excited about this big discovery he'd made. Mom sighed. Perhaps, but I wonder if Dr. Holtz had even made a discovery at all. You mean he only thought he had? I asked.
It's possible, Mom replied, if he was really suffering from some sort of mental breakdown. There's a lot of precedent with this. A scientist believes they're on the verge of something huge, figuring out some famous unsolved math problem or developing a new physical theory. They fill up notebooks with ideas and formulas, and it all looks very convincing. But when other scientists come in and look everything over, they find it's all just nonsense.
I frowned. But those scientists are dealing with serious mental disorders, right? Like schizophrenia? Dr. Holtz never seemed that bad to me.
He was talking to himself, too, Mom said.
Lots of people do that, I countered.
Not like this, Mom said gravely.
I came across him doing it one night. It wasn't talking like you mean. It was like he was having a conversation with an imaginary person, someone he actually thought was there. He wasn't just talking, he was listening, too.
I straightened up, concerned. So you think he was really going crazy? Like certifiably nuts?
I don't know, Mom sighed. This isn't my specialty. But I brought it up to Nina, and she said I wasn't the only one who'd noticed.
Who else had seen him? I asked.
Nina wouldn't say, but she'd asked Dr. Marquez to start keeping a close eye on Dr. Holtz. A lot of things can go wrong with the human mind, Dad told me. Dr. Holtz was getting on in years. This might have been the start of Alzheimer's or some other age-related dementia. Or perhaps it was something triggered by spending so much time here at an advanced age, maybe due to the lower concentration of oxygen in the air or something like that.
You mean he really might have had some sort of space madness, I said?
Roddy suggested that today. I can't believe Roddy actually might have been right about something. Dad looked surprised as well.
Neither can I, he said. Although Roddy is the son of our base psychiatrist, I suppose he could learn something now and then.
I looked down at my hands. So you think this all has something to do with why Dr. Holtz walked out the airlock alone?
It might, Mom said. If he was really losing his mind, it explains why he might have done something so uncharacteristically careless like that.
I thought back to the footage I'd seen of Dr. Holtz in the airlock. If he was really going crazy, could he have simply imagined someone was forcing him to go out on the lunar surface to die?
It made sense, and yet Dr. Holtz had seemed to me like he was in complete control of his mind. His sign language had been so deliberate. He'd had such focus.
But then, I was only a kid. I didn't know squat about mental illness. I considered telling my parents about the footage I'd seen of Dr. Holtz in the airlock and the cryptic message he'd left. I was tired of keeping it all a secret, but I'd promised Zan not to tell anyone about our investigation. At the very least, it seemed I should update her first on what I'd learned before telling anyone else. Certainly I'd be able to find her the next day if she didn't come find me herself. So that's why Nina didn't want me making a stink about Dr. Holtz's death, I asked. She thinks he was losing it too.
I don't know the specific reasons why Nina told you to keep quiet, Mom answered, but I'd say that makes sense. I'm sure NASA doesn't want the public, or the press, to have any idea that Dr. Holtz might have been slipping.
Why not?
Because it could make people question the entire manned space program, Dad explained. What if Dr. Holtz's illness was caused, or hastened, by his living here? What does that say for the future of human habitation on the moon, or any long-term space travel?
So NASA isn't going to look into any of that? I asked, concerned. Seems kind of important, seeing as we're living on the moon.
Mom gave Dad a pointed stare, not pleased with him for bringing this issue up. Then she spoke in her most comforting voice.
Your father was only posing a question for the sake of argument. If Dr. Holtz had mental problems, they weren't caused by living up here. These types of health issues are usually genetic or related to aging, and Dr. Holtz was a lot older than everyone else here.
Even older than Mr. Grissom? Violet asked from her sleep pod.
We all turned to her, surprised she was awake again.
She seemed to be still partly asleep, cocooned in her blankets, her eyelids drooping. "How long have you been listening?" Dad asked.
"I don't know," Violet yawned. "Oh, Mr. Grissom seems way older than Dr. Holtz, like 100 years older."
Mom knelt by Violet's pod and stroked her hair to soothe her back to sleep. "He's not." "He's still not that young," I said thoughtfully. "Is anyone worried about his mental health? He acts a lot stranger than Dr. Holtz ever did. He barely ever talks to anyone."
"Mr. Grissom's just quiet," Mom told me, "and perhaps a bit self-conscious. He's the only blue-collar worker in a base filled with scientists. That can't be easy."
"I want to be a ballerina," Violet sighed,
and then her eyes slid shut. Mom tickled her nose and got no response.
"She's asleep again," Mom said, keeping her voice lower now. I asked, "If Dr. Holtz might have gone through the airlock because he was crazy, is NASA going to investigate that?"
"Oh, there's definitely going to be a major inquiry into this," Dad replied. "There's been a death, after all."
"So is NASA going to send investigators up here?"
"No," Dad said. "We're in a very unusual position. If this were a military base on Earth, the government would probably send a whole team of people in to find out exactly what happened. But that's just not feasible here. There's no seat available for even one investigator on any of the rockets. And even if there was, they wouldn't be able to get here for weeks. So there's not much NASA can do except rely on Nina for the answers. I know she's been ordered to compile a report on Dr. Holtz's death, and that Dr. Marquez has been asked to help."
I asked, "So if Dr. Marquez said Dr. Holtz went out the airlock because he was going crazy, NASA would buy it?"
"So would I," Mom said pointedly. "It was his job to analyze Dr. Holtz." I nodded understanding. My parents' stories about Dr. Holtz had shaken me. They seemed to truly believe he might have been going crazy, and that his great discovery might have been a delusion. I now wondered that myself. Could his euphoria that night in the bathroom have been the result of mental illness? Could his signing that he was being murdered have merely been paranoia? Come to think of it, he'd signed that the Earth had killed him, which certainly sounded crazy. Or were my parents wrong? Neither one of them was a licensed psychiatrist. Maybe they had misdiagnosed Dr. Holtz's behavior. Maybe Dr. Holtz had seemed paranoid because he had good reason to be. Someone was trying to kill him. Besides, I had one more piece of evidence there might be a killer loose on the base. Someone texted me a threat tonight. My parents both reacted with surprise and concern.
When?
They asked at once. About an hour ago. I brought the message up on my watch and showed it to them. Dash, be careful, or you'll end up like Dr. Holtz. I figured my parents would grow even more worried. Instead, they both got angry.
Who sent this to you? Dad demanded.
Well, according to my watch, it was Kira, but I was with her at the time, so I'm guessing whoever sent it hacked her account.
I'll bet it's that jerk Patton Sjoberg, Mom said.
Patton? I asked. You don't think it's from the murderer? My parents glanced toward each other, then looked back at me.
This text just looks like stupid, senseless bullying, Mom said. And Patton Sjoberg is a stupid, senseless bully who you greatly embarrassed today.
If he's so stupid, how do you know how to send a text from Kira? I asked. It's not so hard to hack someone's account, Dad explained. Lily Sjoberg's supposed to have all the brains in that family. Maybe she helped him do it.
Or maybe Lily sent it, Mom suggested. Or either of the parents could have too. Anyone in that family is capable of doing something this insensitive.
Why would they send it from Kira? I asked. Why not just send it directly? Because sending a threat like that is actually a crime, Dad told me. And besides, doing it anonymously like this is probably more frightening.
I was frustrated with my parents for being so quick to discount my murder theory, but then I reconsidered the text. I had assumed it had come from the murderer, but now that I thought about it, it easily could have been a mindless threat from someone who was angry at me.
You don't think there's any chance it's the killer telling me to back off? I asked. Dad shook his head. Dash, there's an extremely good chance that Dr. Holtz died by accident rather than murder. And there's an even better chance that this text was sent by a dumb lout like Patton Sjoberg. He turned to Mom. We ought to show this to Nina first thing in the morning. Whoever sent it ought to be punished, no matter how rich they are.
Mom nodded agreement. Absolutely.
I suddenly found myself wondering if my parents were being completely honest with me. If they did think the text was from someone dangerous,
It made sense that they'd try to calm me with a lie rather than get me even more worried about it. My parents seemed to sense my unease. They shared a look, and although they didn't say anything, it seemed like they had. Mom nodded, then turned to me. "You know what?" she asked. "This has been a tough day for all of us. I can finish this speech in the morning. For now, let's have some fun. I think we have a game of Risk stored on the computer." "In fact," Dad said to me, "I think you were kicking our butts." I laughed. "Yeah, I was." "Not for long," Mom warned me. "Computer, bring up that Risk game."
"It would be my pleasure," the computer squealed.
Mom's eulogy vanished and a hologram of the Risk map appeared before us. Our armies, hundreds of little holographic men, horses, and cannons, were frozen in the midst of battle. According to my parents, games like Risk used to be played on boards with tiny plastic pieces, and all the battles had to be imagined. I might not be a big fan of virtual reality, but a game of Risk in which you can't watch your armies go to war doesn't seem like nearly as much fun to me. "All right," Mom told me. "I'm cashing in my cards for 30 armies. Central America, prepare to be overthrown." Her forces amassed in Venezuela instantly attacked mine. Salvos of cannon fire blasted my men to virtual bits. Back on Earth, I might have balked at the idea of playing games with my parents night after night. I certainly have a lot of friends who would consider it lame. But on the moon, I don't have any other options. And to be honest, the forced time with my family is one of the best things about living here. For the next few hours, we launched attacks against one another, conquering countries and continents, and then losing them again, until finally I wiped both my parents off the globe. I actually forgot about Dr. Holtz, his suspicious death, and the threat that had been made against me. For a little while, at least. Excerpt from the Official Residence Guide to Moonbase Alpha, copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Exercise. Physical activity is an important part of a healthy lifestyle on Earth, and on the Moon, it's even more important. Due to the significantly lower gravity on the Moon, only 1/6 that of Earth, your muscles won't have to work nearly as hard at MBA. But while this sounds relaxing, it can have serious consequences. Muscles that would normally be worked by moderate exercise, such as walking, lifting objects, or even simply sitting upright, may begin to atrophy on the lunar surface from disuse. If this is allowed to continue unchecked, you might return to Earth to find your muscles have weakened to the point where you can't even stand up. In addition, without the usual force of gravity placed on them, your bones can begin to lose density on the Moon. Don't fear, however. There is a simple solution that will prevent both muscle and bone loss and provide plenty of enjoyment. Exercise. MBA has a full-service gym equipped with state-of-the-art equipment. To counteract the effects of low gravity, at least 2 hours of exercise are suggested every day, although even more can't hurt. Exercise should be divided between endurance, treadmills, stairmasters, stationary bikes, and muscle building, resistance bands, with perhaps a bit more emphasis on resistance to fight that pesky muscular deterioration. All lunar knots should keep a detailed record of their exercise so that their health, muscle strength, and bone density can be accurately tracked and measured. But that doesn't mean working out has to be a chore. Watch a movie or read a book while you're on the machines. Or better yet, exercise with a friend. At MBA, staying in shape can be just as much fun as it is back on Earth, if not more.
Chapter 12. Prehistoric Motivation. Lunar Day 189, smack in the middle of the night. I couldn't sleep again. Only this time it wasn't due to the litany of things that normally prevented me from sleeping. Claustrophobia, the rancid air mattress, space food making me sick. Instead, I was wound up thinking about Dr. Holtz's death and all the other mysterious things going on at Moonbase Alpha. Was Dr. Holtz losing his mind, or had he really made a great discovery? Why had Nina lied to me about the cameras in the bathrooms? Was she trying to cover up Dr. Holtz's craziness, or something else? Was Chang still mad enough at Dr. Holtz to kill him? Why was Lars Sjoberg suddenly so desperate to get off the moon? The Sjobergs had hated MBA since they'd arrived, so why hadn't they ever tried to go home before Dr. Holtz's death? Had Patton Sjoberg, or someone else in his family, really sent me that threat? And what was Daphne doing on the computer when she was supposed to be operating the robot arm? Finally, at 2 in the morning, I couldn't take it anymore.
In my cramped sleep pod, I was starting to feel like I'd been buried alive. I slipped out, taking care not to wake my family, and headed for the gym. With everything that had happened the day before, I hadn't done my mandated 2 hours of exercise to keep my bones and muscles from turning to mush. In truth, missing a day probably doesn't make a difference, but it's better to be safe than sorry. Once you start slacking off, it's hard to get back in the routine. I didn't want to end up like Roddy, who hadn't done a lick of exercise in weeks. He now had the muscle tone of a bowl of pudding. Dad said there was a decent chance that when Roddy eventually got back to Earth, the increased gravity would snap his legs like toothpicks. I'd expected to have the gym to myself, but Chiang Hai-tek was there. He was working out with the resistance bands. These are the NBA equivalent of weightlifting. It was too expensive to fly several tons of weights to space, and given the low gravity, we would have needed weights 6 times heavier than those at an earthbound gym, so the bands had been developed instead. They're like giant rubber bands that you can electronically adjust the elasticity of. You attach them to the floor or wall, then push against them with your legs or arms. It feels the exact same as lifting free weights, only without the fear that you might accidentally drop them and crush your rib cage. I paused in the doorway. Chiang had always been friendly to me and my family, but now, with murder on my mind, I found myself slightly frightened of him. The idea of being alone with anyone suddenly seemed like a bad idea. I wavered for a moment, thinking I should hurry back to my room, but Chiang saw me before I could.
"Hey," he called out. "A fellow insomniac. What's keeping you up, Dash?"
"Guess I'm still freaked out about Dr. Holtz."
"I hear you, pal."
Chiang was only wearing a tank top, revealing all the tattoos on his arms. Every time he flexed against the resistance bands, Albert Einstein and the rest of the great scientists swelled in size.
"This thing's been a punch in the gut to all of us. I mean, I knew Holtz was getting on in years, but he always seemed so young. It kind of felt like he was going to live forever. Want to do a race on the head-to-head?"
The head-to-head is one of the few fun things to do at MBA. It's a virtual reality system that hooks to any of the workout machines and simulates a race between them. It isn't quite the same thing as a real foot or bicycle race, but since there's no other outlet for physical competition on the moon, it's quite popular. As much as I enjoy it, though, I look for an excuse to leave. "No thanks. You'll crush me."
"I'll set it on a harder level for me."
Chiang gave one last flex against the resistance bands, then let them snap back to the wall. His muscles were so pumped with blood that Einstein's and Niels Bohr's heads looked ready to explode.
"I probably shouldn't," I said. "Come on, it'll be fun."
Chiang waved for me to join him. By now, making more excuses would only seem suspicious.
"Okay." "Excellent. Treadmills?"
"Sure." While Chiang set the head-to-head up, I subtly checked out the settings on his resistance bands. He had set them to 3,000 pounds, equal to 500 back on Earth. I gave one a test flex. It didn't give an inch. I might as well have been trying to stretch concrete.
"All right," Chiang called. "We are ready to rumble."
He waved gallantly to one of two treadmills. I climbed aboard. There was a belt attached to the treadmill to hold me down on it, simulating Earth gravity so I could actually run. I locked it around my waist, slipped on a pair of hologoggles, and instantly found myself in Yosemite Valley back on Earth. It was a beautiful day with a bright blue, cloudless sky. In the distance, Vernal Falls plunged down a sheer rock face into a cloud of mist. I couldn't see my avatar in this game. The entire race was from my point of view. Chiang materialized next to me a moment later. Unlike Roddy, he hadn't enhanced his avatar at all. It looked exactly like the real Chiang. But then, real-life Chiang is so freakishly athletic, he kinda looks like a video game warrior anyhow.
"Ready?"
he asked.
"Yeah." "On your marks, then."
I tensed reflexively. A numeric countdown flashed over Half Dome.
3, 2, 1.
A buzzer sounded. I sprang into action, but Chiang was faster, pulling out in front right away. I didn't try to catch him, not wanting to tire myself out right off the bat. Instead, I let him set the pace, following him along the wooded trail. It felt good to run in Earth gravity again, or at least a simulation of it, rather than bound into the air with every step. Chiang had enabled the sound options on the head-to-head as well, so I could hear birds chirping in the trees, water burbling in a nearby stream, and the occasional chitter of a chipmunk. The two of us could also talk to each other as we ran. Now that Chiang had roped me into the race, I figured I should take advantage of the opportunity and question him. I probably wouldn't get another chance alone with him for a while.
So, you're upset about Dr. Holtz, too?
Of course, Chang said. Why wouldn't I be?
I heard he stole some ideas from you.
Chang's avatar looked back at me, which meant that the real Chang had just glanced my way as well. Then, to my surprise, he laughed.